Hi, I'm Vivek Kartha, and welcome to Deconstructed. Every episode, we're discussing the future of the world's largest asset class, real estate, through the eyes of the people who live and breathe it. Thank you for joining us, and let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com. We're joined by Brad Klatt, the managing partner of Canoebrook Partners and chairman of Logical Buildings. Morning, Brad.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
You've had a long and successful career in the real estate industry, and cycles are part of the job. What about the last year feels similar to prior downturns?
It's almost impossible for us and the businesses we are in to really compare, because some of the other cycles that we have taken advantage of and, let's say, moved out of the way of, if you will, in the early 1990s, internet bust over the 2000 mark, and 2007, 8, 9, were all able to be seen coming. You know, maybe not by everybody, but you could see them coming in the industry. You could see debt piled up too high. You could see capital moving too quickly to build new products. You could see the total debacle in the mortgage markets that had to find its way into the rest of the business world. But this one was showing us continuous peaking in almost all real estate markets and almost all real estate fields. And then one day we woke up and it wasn't there anymore because we couldn't spend time together and so many other factors. So I think this is very different. Of course it is. It's totally a non-business, non-foreseeable issue. And only if you had gotten off the roller coaster early because you felt your industry or your segment was peaking in 13, 14, 15, or even 17, 18, could you have avoided what's happened. On the other hand, so many people have taken advantage of it in so many creative ways that it's fascinating to watch and be part of.
There are a lot of really loud voices on future of urban centers, the death of office, and all these sort of headline-grabbing things. But what trends are you particularly paying attention to that you think others would find interesting?
The first thing I would say is, if they weren't headline-grabbing, we wouldn't be reading about them eight times a day. There's a lot of man bites dog going around for people to have a voice, and I totally get that. We're looking at a couple of things that are absolutely incredible in both our real estate and our technology businesses, significantly for risk management, because we have a lot of assets, you know, they're deployed, but also very much to take a serious advantage. So some trends that we see that we're fascinated by. We think that there is a very significant shift in demography, in wealth, in capital businesses that have tremendous capital controls, and in employment headed south by southwest in the United States, away from these large cities. And we don't think it's vacation. We don't think it's short term. We really do believe that the Sun Belt is going to have a better next 5 years or 7 years than they've had in the last 5 or 7 years. And they're going to do it on the basis of reconfiguring the real estate into being technology advantaged, to being climate thoughtful, to being sustainable. All of the things that are attracting the companies of the future and our most technology-laden and based companies today. We think it's going to be very substantial. There are lots of articles about this that are talking about the possibility of 10 to 20 congressional seats moving south. The last time we had that move was 1920 to 1955, where 37 congressional seats moved north. And it was a 35-year period. This is happening much more swiftly and much faster. we're fascinated by it. Between that and the incredible dependence on technology in so many ways that is years ahead of where it would have been had we not had the pandemic.
Yeah, I want to come back to that technology point in a minute, but you said something really interesting that I want to follow up on. So you're sort of getting back to the fundamentals of competitive business, that the buildings of the future in the Sun Belt might look more attractive than the sort of urban centers of the past. Well, sort of a naive question, why can't New York and, you know, other large East Coast cities compete? Why can't they build and innovate in the same way and offer an alternative to sort of flight down to the Sun Belt?
In some respects, they can. We can say, you know, the first mover was AllianceBernstein, headed out of New York, a base in New York, but then to Nashville. They can. But these times are approaching us. People are having a hard time, no matter how much they have invested in that lifestyle, of wanting to work in a 40 or 50 or 60 story building, of commuting to work an hour to hour and a half each way, to having a lifestyle, and maybe it changes when you get down to Austin, of working, you know, 13 to 14 hours a day until you're at least 35 years old, and then your whole business and your life is intertwined. So I guess it's possible that these cities will recover to the level they were at. But right now, the lifestyle of the people in this country who make between, let's say, $100,000 and $400,000 as software engineers, as business people who are embedded in new technologies and the Microsofts, Ciscos, Oracles of the world, if you call them up, you don't get their office in San Francisco, Chicago, or New York. They're in Austin or Dallas or, you know, Buckhead or Phoenix. And sure, they're going to come back to their job. But a lot of these jobs, we open up the newspaper now or the internet every day, and we're seeing 400 workers from this company going to Charlotte, 500 going here, Oracle moving to, and Tesla, you know, moving to Austin. Tremendous moves of capital and intellect and IQ per desktop. Replacing those people is going to take a long time. So can New York, Chicago, and LA be great, and San Francisco be great? Of course they're going to be great cities. They have culture. They have so much more than the others, but they also have very high prices, climate differential, and a lifestyle that it seems to me, I'm just one person, that 50 to 65 year old senior managers are going to respect more tremendously than they did before as they plant 400 engineers from Microsoft to do something in Dallas and 2,000 Oracle people in some other city. And that respect, I think, is going to create a very significant trend in demography and business that we had not previously seen.
Yeah, it littered all over that response, which was fascinating, is the word technology, engineers and technology. So I want to move our conversation there. But before we jump in, why don't you tell the viewers a little bit about what the team at Logical Buildings is up to?
Well, the founding of Logical Buildings was absolutely by curiosity. We were building five or six large buildings a year, 20, 30, 40 story, multifamily and mixed use buildings in the East, Northeast. We finally turned to understanding energy. Lots of the bigger variable costs of running multifamily buildings, salaries were taken care of in the 2006 to 8 range. Taxes for new buildings, real estate taxes, are primarily contractual and abated in the Northeast. And so we turned to energy and we asked ourselves, well, why does it cost $800,000 in energy for us to run a 40-story apartment house? And everybody else, that's half the whole energy spend in the building. And the other half is the residents, who maybe 300-400 units are spending, you know, $300 each a month, a total of $1.5 million. And we started to understand, we brought in a bunch of engineers and we started to understand the energy mosaic and how the appreciation of where it's made, how it's made, how to become partners with the utilities, and effectively when they move left, you need to help them move left slowly. And when they move right, do the same thing. You have to fill in their gaps when they need you to curtail and you do curtail at the same time that they need you to do that, their costs are lower. And in most of these states now, they pay you to do that. And with advanced metering infrastructure that was put in, we decided to scale the business and turn it into a software business and insert it. And so now Logical Buildings is one of the most significant energy management sustainability software companies in the US. We count most of the major multifamily and other REITs as our clients, as well as many of the large family owners, and their software insertions that effectively teach a building and the people who run it and all of the residents in AMI jurisdictions how to be simpatico with the grid and how to save a great deal of your costs and a significant amount of your carbon emissions. Some of that's voluntary, which is wonderful, and some of it is with the big stick of fines like we see now under the Climate Mobilization Act in New York. But this is where the blue world is going, and we're very lucky to be on the wave.
What are some of your observations about what works and what doesn't in technology?
I'd like to isolate that question to real estate because I really don't have the skill set to look beyond. We've been very active investors in software and technology since 2008 and 2009, when a couple of our adult children moved into big data space and others. So we had familiarity, weren't scared by it. Meant a lot to us. We were integrating it tremendously in our real estate businesses. The capacity to understand the value of technology is very simple. What did I do before? How did we do this process before? And can I do it, and I don't mean this pejoratively, without people having to touch it? Can I pay a bill without having to process it in a piece of paper down four people signing it and ultimately getting to somebody who's the ultimate signer and doing that? And it's as simple as that. So can we streamline our production of almost anything, whether it's an operational function, administrative function, or the actual work itself, by virtue of inserting technologies? And one of the most wonderful aspects of what Apple and Google and other companies have done with the utilization of open APIs, so many of these incredibly intellectually promising ideas can be sewn together by virtue of a few clicks and become an umbrella and manage risk and manage reward. And that's really the way, you know, we see it. And that's the opportunity, we think, is to create the umbrellas to manage your risk and to create so many different non-heavily capitalized pilots in order to understand where your product needs to go. In building an apartment house, there's no other way to pilot it other than building those units and seeing if that demography you want to attract will come to it. In software, it's maybe hundreds of hours, but it's hundreds of hours. You deploy it in the right demography. And if it really works with all these wonderful catalysts that are there now and digital visualizations to help people understand what they can achieve, it's less expensive, it's easier to pilot, it's much easier to implement. And if it's good, it's easier to pile on and even do better at it. It's fascinating. And as you integrate that into real estate, it really is allowing real estate to achieve so many things in service and its capacities and risk management that we could never do in a four-wall building before. Could never see far corners of our building, far corners of our data, integration with an energy grid, integration with a pricing system. Just think of all these wonderful applications and platforms that have been built that are accessible to us on clicks. It's literally like having resources, you know, 50 times what you otherwise would ever build in a business available to you for the few moments you need it at a reasonable cost. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm smiling over here just thinking about the possibilities. And I think that that's a great lead into thinking about the future of talent in the real estate space, which is looking more and more, as you said, integrated between people who understand real estate and understand technology. So for folks thinking about starting or investing decades of their career in the real estate industry, what do you think the space needs more of to succeed over the next 20, 30 years?
I think the answer to that question is really easy. I think that at the base, the early part of one's career, where we all go to internships, whether we are doctors, lawyers, doesn't make a difference. We all go to some sort of internship to provide us with a stream of work, a stream of knowledge, morals, ethics, all these wonderful frameworks that will frame how we think and how we operate for years to come. So I still think we need to do that. But with respect to real estate, and maybe it really is where I come from, so I'm totally biased, I think you need those few years out in the field. I think you need to understand the asset and how do these assets work? What makes them attractive? Now, we know how to lease them online and with virtual visits and things like that, but what does it really feel like in that room? What do I want my next one to feel like? Do I want it to feel like this diagram, this drawing, this you know, virtual room? Or do I want it to feel like something that's human and personal? Do I see somebody's eyes walk into an apartment that's horizontally laid out with lots of glazing or vertically like a railroad car laid out, but it's the same square footage and same pricing and, you know, on the web with all the metrics we use in math, it looks the same, but it definitely isn't. So I think those first few years, whether it's in office or industrial or residential or mixed use, or even retail, I think that just like it is, has been for the last many years, that having that early experience in that environment is tremendously valuable. So I would say that's a key. But going on with the career beyond that, the avenues for value added, for risk management and reward creation are so many more numerous and fascinating and much easier to understand with the web in front of you and everybody else's, as you say, headline opinions, helping you and guide you down the very many yellow brick roads, and hopefully you won't fall off any of them.
One quick question as we wrap up, maybe a one-word answer. As a former New Yorker, I've got to ask, what's going on in New York City? Is it a cycle, or do you think it's a permanent shift?
Who could ever say it's other than a cycle?
Great answer. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate the time today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. And as always, a very special thank you to our guests. We'll be back soon, so please subscribe to Deconstructed on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. More details can be found at www.goworkspace.com/podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com.